Dana Lash's Absurd Truth Podcast, sponsored by Kel-Tec.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
I read this story because it's insane. It's the headline is from the CBS affiliate in Martin County, Florida. It said, from strip club to loan to arson, from strip club loan to arson attempt, how a $100 debt ignited a near tragedy. So it talks about this Uber driver who and deputies who stopped a deadly arson attempt. But the reason they were able to stop it is because the guy, the Florida man that the Uber driver picked up, said he's on his way. He's going to go burn down his friend's trailer and he's going to be using some gasoline that he has because his friend has not paid back a $100 loan. He gave him to go to a strip club and have a night out. And then so the Uber driver like was able to signal to authorities and they arrested this guy. This is a crazy story. So they picked the guy up and the Carlos Flores, he was livid, 33-year-old. He was livid because he gave his friend, he said, $100 to go to the strip club. Why would you do that? And then his friend never paid it back. His friend insisted that he did, but Flores said it didn't happen. So he literally hired an Uber driver to drive him to his friend's house where he was going to burn down his friend's trailer. And I guess just get in the Uber and go back? Like, how is that going to work? I don't know. The driver was, like, understandably alarmed. And so he discreetly alerted the deputies. And so they had Martin County sheriffs. I mean, then they smelled the gas on it. Like, they smelled that he had accelerant on him. So he also had a knife. And so I guess he was going to stab his friend. He got out. And the Uber driver, they were like, I guess, you know, act normally. And the deputies apprehended Flores. But Flores was able to pour out some gasoline around the house and he was going to light it. That's crazy. So I honestly could not be an Uber driver because I think it's harder if you're a chick. But also, you got to be in a vehicle with weirdos sometimes, right? Like, I appreciate the drivers that like, go above and beyond and they make it nice, you know, and they got like water. I mean, I always love giving them guys like great ratings. But I would be weird. Like, what if you get a jack wagon who's like bringing gas to his friend's trailer to Barney's house down? Like, what if you got to give that guy a ride? And you got to commit. Like, you don't even know he's crazy until the journey has begun, right? You know, drivers can give you ratings too. What kind of rating do you think that guy got? I bet he can't ever take Uber again. Yeah, I bet he can't. So this man was at a campsite. Got to talk about this guy. Yeah, if you would imagine what people who have meth at a campsite would look like. Yeah, that's about right. Florida man was arrested on a drug charge after a methamphetamine was found at his campsite near Holmes Creek Boat Ramp. 41-year-old Michael Ryan Forbes is charged with possession of meth. He was also going to manufacture, sell, or deliver a $2,500 bond. They said that the sheriff's deputies were summoned to Holmes Creek Boat because of suspicious activity. And, of course, they found people with backpacks loaded up with meth and glass pipes and all kinds of stuff. And they busted like a whole bunch of people. So I guess one of the guys, Kane, yeah. Tell me that you see the guy with the long hair who literally looks like he was hired. He's like, he's like a cat. He looks like if a sloth became a person and went to jail for meth, it would be this guy. 48-year-old. He's 48. This guy. Oh, no. Is this a 52-year-old or a 48-year-old?
I think it is a 48-year-old.
I mean, he looks. I can't tell.
41.
Dude. Yeah. That guy, that Juan is getting ready to shoot. It's if a sloth became a human. That looks like a fake hair. It looks like a wig. Anyway, they were all arrested because they were going to distribute this meth from this boat ramp.
Hi, I'm Lillian, an English major at Hillsdale College. Here's Hillsdale President Dr. Larry Arn with a Constitution Minute.
America's founders believed in a separation of church and state, in that the country was not to have an official religion or an official sect. But that did not mean that government was to be hostile to religion, or even indifferent to religion, as many today argue. In fact, America's founding document, the Declaration of Independence, includes both a reference to God as the author of the laws of nature and a confident assertion that human beings are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Far from being hostile or indifferent to religion, America's founders understood the theology of the Declaration to be an essential part of the education of citizens.
To learn more and get a free pocket constitution, visit constitutionminute.com.
This Constitution Minute was furnished by Hillsdale College.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. At the bottom of the second hour, I don't know if you got to see Tim Walz talked to Shannon Bream. Shannon Bream, by the way, is one of the nicest people in broadcasting. She's like an actual Christian. Like, some people just wear the crosses. Sometimes you'll see people on cable news, and I joke around, but I'm serious. Like, the bigger the cross, the bigger the moral deficiency. Many times. I'm not kidding. One day I'm going to write a book and I'll name people, but not now. Just trust. But Shannon Bream actually is a real one. She's one of the nicest people. Obviously, she's a conservative, but she also is just an anchor. Like, this is a weird phrase to say for legacy media, but like a classically trained anchor, right? She's very good at what she does. So she had Tim Walz on. These are not hard questions that she's asking of him. And it was, audio soundbite 23. It was a disaster. That's putting it mildly. Watch.
The vice president has made it clear that she has policies that make a difference. Her border policies are the most strongest, the fairest we've seen.
It's but
the
now, bill Governor, that you know, a lot of people, including your own party, would not join that statement. There are millions of people who have come here over the last few years that, they see this as an
but
open
policies,
border.
Well, simply, we have a policy. Donald Trump sees it as a political. Look, James Lankford in Oklahoma, the Border Patrol agents, the Wall Street Journal, the Chamber of Commerce, all said pass this legislation. You have to have Congress to authorize 1,500 new border agents. You have to have Congress to authorize DOJ to speed adjudications on these asylum claims. Those are things that would actually work. Donald Trump told us for 4 years he would deal with this. He didn't. He didn't build his wall, 2%. Mexico didn't pay for it. This is a real bill that has bipartisan support. It has the experts on board, and it starts to tackle these issues. Yeah. And we don't have to resort to demonizing people. We don't have to resort to making up or crafting stories, as Senator Vance said he did. Those things were not happening in Springfield, but it doesn't mean that we can't pass a piece of legislation to strengthen our border. That's what Kamala Harris is talking about.
Well,
she's talking about solving the problem.
That piece of legislation does include the wall that you guys have been so, you've disparaged that. I mean, the vice president has as well. So I don't know if she really intends to move forward with that. But it was negotiated by three or four senators, and many Republicans came out against it long before President Trump indicated he didn't like it either.
Yeah. And then there was this where they get into the abortion issue. And you remember he told this story. And, you know, we've talked about the story of Amber Thurman. And this was out in Georgia where even her own attorney said it was not the law on abortion. It was, her attorney said it was medical malpractice. Honestly, if you're taking that, Mifepristone, the abortion pill, one of the effects of that is you could get sepsis, you could bleed to death, all like horrible things. Like, every bad side effect is detailed as a consequence of taking that pill. She took it. And then after she was vomiting blood for 3 days, she waited to go to the hospital. Then she went to the hospital. She confronted Walz about this because Walz kept saying that it was the abortion law that killed Thurman. And it wasn't. Even her own attorney disagrees with that. Audio soundbite 24. Listen.
Wade, and about the Amber Thurman case in Georgia, her family has, and it's tragic, she is a young mother who left behind a young son, but what her family has said is it was a complication from an abortion pill that she received, and she didn't get proper care when she went to a Georgia hospital, which had multiple opportunities to intervene there. Her own attorney, the family's attorney, says it wasn't the Georgia law, it was the hospitals. What he claims is malpractice, not treating her, when she clearly showed up in distress and still had the byproducts of her pregnancy because of that rare complication from the abortion pill. So just to be clear on the Georgia law and how her family and her attorney sees it.
I think they also indicated that had she not go to North Carolina after the debate the other night, that she would have been in a better position. So look.
No, had she just not, she legally acquired the pills. That's not an issue. So what he's suggesting still is that there was some sort of illegality due to the changing of the law, and there wasn't. That's not true. She waited for 3 days after she took the pill when she was home. 3 days. So that's not true. These are not going well. These interviews, the 60 Minutes interview was really bad. Audio soundbite 2, Kamala Harris was talking about the Middle East. Listen.
It seems that Prime Minister Netanyahu is not listening.
Well, Bill, the work that we have done has resulted in a number of movements in that region by Israel that were very much prompted by or a result of many things, including our advocacy for what needs to happen.
And it was prompted by and such as maps. And it's, you know, not a lot of people have maps. And it was such as that. That was so bad. Do you want to hear her talk about her economic plan?
Oh.
Audio soundbite three.
Okay.
Go ahead. Just play it.
My plan
is
about saying that when you invest in small businesses, you invest in the middle class, and you strengthen America's economy. Small businesses are part of the backbone of America's economy.
But pardon me, Madam Vice President. The question was, how are you going to pay for it?
Well, one of the things is I'm going to make sure that the richest among us who can afford it pay their fair share in taxes. It is not right that teachers and nurses and firefighters are paying a higher tax rate than billionaires and the biggest corporations.
But
I plan on making that fair.
But we're dealing with the real world here.
But the real world includes...
How are you going to get this through Congress?
You know, when you talk quietly with a lot of folks in Congress, they know exactly what I'm talking about because their constituents know exactly what I'm talking about.
What?
Their constituents
This is fake. It's almost like it's fake. I feel like if you were watching this in a movie, it would fit, right?
Right.
Who is this guy? Who is the anchor? Because he's so straight-faced. Juan, can you just isolate where he just sat there looking at her? Because that man's poker face... I want that man's poker face. I just want to have that man's... He's just staring at her.
...out there in our nation don't have maps. And that I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should...
Give me the anchor's face, though,
over here.
CBS, because he was so good. He was so good. And he just was like very... He just was looking at her like, I am unmoved. Look at his face. He is not, that's a poker face. Look, he's like amused. He's not sympathetic. If you're her and you're staring at his face, can you read him? Can you read his face?
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell whether he's got a touch of incredulity on his countenance? He looks like he's going to laugh at her, but he's also being it. Oh my gosh. And he's like, but that's first. He's like, you didn't answer the question. And this is CBS. They hate her. Oh, my gosh. It's so bad. It's so bad. But there's more. Because isn't 7 related to this, too? Or is this... I know somebody said... Go ahead and play 7. This is so bad.
I want to take a moment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
And
this
can
is
we
that
try...
Skank podcast.
...to think of any law that gives the government the power to make a decision...
I know what you're going to ask.
...about... A man's body.
Let's no. No.
Is there any law?
No.
Really?
No.
Child support. So she can't go and do... She's only done like what? She did 60 Minutes interview and then she went on... It's a sex podcast. And this chick brought her on to talk to her and it was like, you know, kind of that kind of stuff. And of course they talked about abortions because heaven forbid you be a woman and you do a podcast and you be on the left. I mean, that's all you talk about. Sex, vaginas, abortions, baby killing, blah, 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 being a hoe. That's it. There's no lie. And she couldn't even answer why. I think what audio soundbite 5 is this, because she was asked, well, why did you do this like podcast that didn't even touch on any serious issue? All you talked about was sex and abortion. Why didn't you like talk about anything serious? And this was her, again, if you want to try to wade through this answer, boy, audio soundbite 5.
I'm curious, like you don't do too many long form interviews. What made you want to do Caller Daddy today?
Well, I think you and your listeners have really got this thing right, which is one of the best ways to communicate with people is to be real.
What?
You know, and to talk about the things that people really care about. I mean, what I love about what you do is that
it's about sex.
Your voice and your show is really about sex. Your listeners. And I think especially now, this is a moment in the country and in life where people really want to know they're seen and heard and,
oh my gosh,
and that they're part of a community.
This is so stupid.
That they're not
I'm
out
dying.
There alone.
This is so embarrassing. And, also, what is with that obstetrician set? Like, it looks like you're about to go in the corner and throw your legs in stirrups. Is it just to like reinforce that whole like, hey, you're at the gyno? Is that like the whole shtick of it? It looks like a giant gyno set. Am I wrong? I'm not wrong. With all the Amazon accoutrements. I mean, I can like sit here and be like, that's all Amazon wish list from some chick named Becky out in Utah. And it looks like an obstetrician's office. That's what it looks like. That's what the whole set looks like. It's a giant maxi pad commercial. That's it, with wings. That's like supposed to be like the it in podcasting and chicks. And then it's call her daddy. Just, how about shut up, bitch? How about that as a podcast name? I'd be great with it. What? I'm not wrong. You know, I'm not wrong. Can I? Stop with the blonde wood. Hate it. Hate. It does, though. You don't go into those offices, King, because you're a dude.
True.
I mean, when you go into the man's office, it's like going into a mechanic shop, isn't it? I don't know. I'm a chick.
No,
I don't go there.
Not,
I don't go into men's
like
spaces.
The mechanic. It's quite different than the mechanic, but that did look like just a general doctor's office feel, like a waiting room sort of doctor's office thing. I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, it looked like there's going to be like some spa music playing and then somebody's got a diffuser in the corner, right? One of those oil.
Essential oil.
Yeah, diffusers. Essential oil diffusers. There's probably like a bowl of crystals out there.
Palo Santo.
Jeez. I mean, it makes me, I'm allergic to that. Those are the interviews that she does. That's what she does. I don't know. And then you have this. You have Jen Psaki saying, well, they're going to start taking more risks, Walz Harris. Which one was this? I had this highlighted and I just let it go. She said that they're going to start taking, yeah, Audio Summit 25. A big shift is coming. They're going to start taking more risks. Like what risks? Listen.
We've already seen them announce this, which I think is a great thing. Vice President Harris has a number of interviews she's doing over the next couple of weeks. Tim Walz, who I think is a huge asset who hasn't been tapped into nearly enough for the last month, is going to be out there a great deal. And you're right. I mean, the thing is, at this point, when everything matters, you have to take risks. And that people may make mistakes. It's worth it. Put them out there and have them doing a bunch of stuff. But we've already seen them announce their plans to do exactly that.
So what... I'm curious, like, are they going to go and what? What are they doing, Kane?
The risk is probably they're planning an actual sit-down interview that isn't edited, that's live. That would be risky.
But they've been going so well for them.
It'd be so risky.
The sit-downs. Partners over at Kel-Tec. The lightest, thinnest 9mm on the market with double-stack mag. It's the Kel-Tec P15. I almost said PFF10. It's the Kel-Tec P15. Two versions, metal and polymer. Metal version has the gorgeous walnut panels on it. The polymer version has that gator grip texture. It's just nice. It comes with two magazines, standard 15 round, minimal pinky extension. If you want the ultra concealability, it has that too. Flush fit double stack mag holds 12. Tritium fiber optic front sight, fully adjustable fiber optic, 2-dot rear. And it has striker fire reliability and a great trigger pull. Lifetime warranty. Compact, just absolutely ideal for concealed carry self-defense. This is like one of my go-tos. It's the lightest, thinnest of anything I have that's 9mm. You don't lose stopping power, but you gain concealability. It's from the inventors of the micro-compact pistol category, Kel-Tec. Innovation, performance, Kel-Tec. Learn more at KelTecWeapons.com. That's KelTecWeapons.com. It's the P15. Tell them Dana sent you.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So... This is a crazy story. You guys remember, he's legally blind, the former New York governor, David Paterson. So he was savagely attacked by a group of teenagers. He and his stepson were out in Manhattan, and they saw these teenagers climbing a fire escape, and he told them to get down. And he and his stepson, 20-year-old Anthony Silva, they came across these teenagers. They were walking their dog, and they got beat up, apparently brutally. I don't know what happened to the dog. New York Post, though, said that they got beat up pretty bad. And it's interesting because Anthony is the biological son of Curtis Silva. So he's out there walking. I know. That's what makes it super interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So he got bruises and cuts. He's expected to recover. He had a concussion. They actually had to take Paterson to Cornell, to the medical center, where his condition was listed as okay, but it was filed as a gang assault. And these are like teenagers. I'm looking at them. Guys, they look like... young. It's so weird. So Atlanta's investigator of the year was allegedly shot after breaking into the home. I don't know. This Aubrey Horton, 32, was killed in Douglas County by a homeowner in self-defense. An off-duty Atlanta police investigator was fatally shot. He broke into a home about 5 in the morning. He appeared to be experiencing a mental health episode or under the influence of narcotics. He tried to break into the front door. The individual who resided there defended themselves. A 10-year-old boy was charged after driving a stolen car near a crowded Minneapolis playground. And not just near it, but also on it. A 10-year-old boy, and it's not the first time that he's done this. So this, which is now coming out now with the video, September 20th, Minneapolis police said that it happened near an elementary school in Minneapolis when the playground was crowded, and there's like CCTV footage. Nobody was injured, thankfully, but this is the third time this 10-year-old has been arrested. Listen to this. He is a suspect, 10 years old, in a dozen cases. Auto theft, robbery, assault with a deadly weapon. That is crazy. He's 10 years old. His parents also need to be culpable here.
Right.
No, we don't need jumbo beavers, but that's not going to stop scientists from trying to resurrect one. First, it was the dodo. Now it's this. Stick with us. Ongoing disaster follow-up recovery from Hurricane Helene. It has been unbelievable, the headlines that have been coming out about this. And I'm looking at now how they've been prioritizing the DEI stuff. Let me pull this up. There was audio where they were saying that something, it's like that somehow people who are alphabet are somehow more disproportionately affected by weather, like the hurricane. It was something to that effect.
Is that
May have been. And they were saying that they had this FEMA disaster preparedness meeting. And in it, they were saying that, well, we should focus our efforts on the alphabet people because they struggled before this storm. They were really struggling before that. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. They said it was about disaster equity. What? That doesn't make any sense to me. How is this about disaster equity? Yes, it was at 9:30 this morning in Slack. Is this, if we have this, play this, because this is what they've been talking about with FEMA. And this is, I think, one of the problems in making sure that we're getting things to people. Listen.
The shift that we're seeing right now is a shift in emergency management from utilitarian principles where everything is designed for the greatest good for the greatest amount of people to disaster equity. But we have to do more, yeah. Right? And so this topic is intersecting, I think, with a number of other topics where we have to look at policies and understand to what extent they have disadvantaged communities that had less assets, communities that had pre-existing vulnerabilities.
So they're saying
accessing disaster.
They have to. We should focus our efforts on LGBTQIA people. They struggled before the storm, was the direct quote. And this is, they also added, FEMA relief is no longer about getting the greatest good for the greatest amount of people. It's about disaster equity. What is disaster equity? What is even that? But this is what they were talking about in this soundbite. And I am trying to wrap my head around this because the alphabet people, how are they more disproportionately affected by the hurricane than people who don't say that they're alphabet people? What? Do gay people get blown away more on the winds? I don't understand. Like, what's happening? Like, anchor down the gays. Like, what's going on? Do they get, like, blown up into the hurricane? I don't know.
Is there a questionnaire before they rescue you?
Yeah. Does the boat pull up when you're on top of the pitched roof? Well, you know, which was apparently a huge problem in Butler. When the boat pulls up, do they go, hey, how do you like to have to sex? Is that what they yell before they engage in? Yeah. Are you gay? And then there's probably some, you know, what was that? We can't rescue you until we know if you're gay. Is that?
Yeah. If that's the case, and we just advise everyone to say they're gay.
Just go ahead be like, gay over here. Get me.
Just do it.
Yeah. Just go ahead. Get off them rooftops.
You can sort it all out later.
They said, yeah, FEMA is no longer about getting the greatest good for the greatest amount of people. It's about disaster equity. So some people, because, okay, let me walk down this. Just bear with me, please. So, and this was a FEMA disaster preparedness meeting. So this is not speculation. These are literally FEMA people with official FEMA backgrounds and their official FEMA Zoom call talking about this stuff. And they're saying that it's about disaster equity. So if you and someone else are across a flooded street and you're on each other's, you're on your roof and they're on their roof, and there's one boat, then it has to go to the person who's alphabet. Because it's about disaster equity. That means if you have to die in the name of equity, then I guess you've got to die. This is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. We are taking, you know, these identity factors and making them into idols at the expense of security and safety. They struggled before the storm. Oh my gosh, I can't. One of the guys whose picture there, I don't even understand what half of his... So his name is Tyler Atkins. He's a FEMA. He works as a training manager in the Office of Resilience, managing our Resilient and Ready seminar series. It's a twice monthly webinar. See, this sounds horrible. It discusses climate change equity and FEMA programs. Oh, they have 23,000 employees and they get like $30 billion a year. Why again? This is so... And they've been trying to community note it on X, and they're trying to say it's not FEMA, but yes, we have to actually acknowledge that it's FEMA, admitting that it's FEMA, because it is. So, I mean, what if you're drowning and the water's like actively entering your lungs when the FEMA boat pulls up and they don't know what to do. Like, we don't know if he's gay. You can't say, I mean, can you stop drowning for a second? Just tell us whether or not you're gay. I'm not making all this up. This is how stupid this is. And then you have this, Audio Soundbite 11. They're concerned about the shelters misgendering illegal immigrant trans people. This is all the stuff FEMA has been involved in. Listen to this stuff. This is crazy.
Being a migrant trans woman, there is an undocumented concern. There is also a concern of whether they would trust the people, places that are offering shelter that are faith-based because of the way they've been responded to in the past. Then if they are accepted, what would happen in terms of misgendering, in terms of bedrooms and bathrooms, et cetera. And then in addition, public safety once they're inside from those who are actually sheltering with them.
You know, the first people who have been showing up to all this stuff have been faith-based people. FEMA showed up a week later, so they don't get to complain. They don't get to do any of this. They showed up way later. So it was the faith-based people that showed up first. And now you're more worried about, well, are they using the proper pronouns? Who gives a rat's ass? You've been displaced by a hurricane. You're in need of shelter. Oh my gosh, stop. This is where fantasy goes too far, where you're now actually impeding recovery, assistance, disaster response because of fantasy role play. And you can get mad that it's called fantasy role play, but that's exactly what it is. I mean, it's fantasy role play. And now it's actually affecting saving lives. This is just insane that we're at this juncture in society right now. Well, there's, you know, we don't know if they're, you know, if they're misgendering people. You know, you've got a volunteer staff usually with a lot of these, I mean, these, well, all of them, all of these faith-based entities, it's a volunteer staff. They are operating these shelters. They're serving their community. They're also dealing with hundreds, sometimes thousands of people who need assistance. We don't have time for this. We do not have time for this. Either you're prioritizing saving lives and disaster recovery, or you just want to be the turn in the punch bowl and mess everything up because you're insistent on LARPing. I mean, it just... Audio Soundbite 9, this is when they've been pushing this as their public relations campaign. They're trying to say that this stuff is saying these things and criticizing the agency about these issues. You're criticizing them over something false. But what we just played for you are literally two videos of FEMA people in official FEMA meetings talking about it. Audio Soundbite 9.
So much is going viral online as well. One user suggested yesterday that a militia should go against FEMA. Got more than 500,000 views. What kind of impact has this had on the recovery effort?
It has a tremendous impact on the comfort level of our own employees to be able to go out there, but it's also demoralizing to all of the first responders that have been out there in their communities helping people, FEMA staff, volunteers, the private sector that are working side by side with local officials to go out and help people. I need to make sure I can get the resources to where they're needed. And when you have this dangerous rhetoric like you're hearing, it creates fear in our own employees. We need to make sure we're getting help to the people who need it.
Okay, well, you're prioritizing, though, all of this other identity politics stuff that has nothing to do with anything that you're talking about. So I'm confused. And these aren't falsehoods. All the stuff that they've been saying is actually accurate, that they're being criticized over. I mean, we've got more. I mean, this is just the, you know, the tip of the iceberg. And yeah, and they are claiming that they never gave any kind of money for the care and housing of those who came in illegally. Well, that's just false because we have receipts for that. I mean, it's publicly available. For crying out loud, it's on FEMA's website. How do you think people got this information? This is so stupid. I can't even believe we're arguing about this.
Thanks for tuning in to today's edition of Dana Lash's Absurd Truth Podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.